welcome to the 12th episode of Minorities in Publishing. I'm Jen.
I'm Bev.
And you can find us on Twitter at Minorities in Pub, on Tumblr at minoritiesinpublishing.tumblr.com, and feel free to contact us at Gmail at minoritiesinpublishing@gmail.com. And today we're super psyched to have literary agent Monica Odom on with us, because one of the biggest aspects, or the first quote-unquote hurdles, I think, for writers and illustrators is getting the agent. And that's the big celebratory moment for a lot of us artists. And in terms of us talking about the industry and more diversity in the industry and how that gets into books and promotion and everything, it does technically start with the literary agent. And it's really great to have Monica here to talk about that side of things, because I don't know that everyone understands the agent perspective, or also the agent's role and how significant that is into helping to get more diverse work out there and having diverse agents as well. So thank you so much, Monica, for being here with us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks so much. And we were just talking earlier about how agents also get rejected too, just like authors and artists and everyone else. So we're really excited to talk to you about the various nuances of being an agent. So what on your path to being an agent, did you meet other POCs working as agents or in-house in publishing companies, and did that shape your opinion on the industry?
So I have only actually worked at an agency ever. I started off initially as an unpaid intern at a literary agency, Joel Del Burgo Associates, and I had been referred there from a college professor. So it was about kind of knowing someone.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, from there I moved on to the agency where I am now, which is Liza Dawson Associates. And when I first started there, the other assistant, she was... I guess, I'm not sure what she is, but she was not white.
Mm-hmm.
And that was something that, in such a small company, made me feel welcome in a very unspoken way. And it was just nice to see color around.
Yeah.
But actually, she's no longer working for us, although I love her. And, but as far as, you know, in my company itself, we have a nice diversity of, you know, personalities and stuff like that. But as far as people of color around in publishing, like, I just rarely see it ever. And, you know, I have editor lunches, maybe like one in every 15 to 20 lunches. It's a person of color. And it's just, when they sit down across from me, it's like, hello. and it definitely did. I've been in the industry for about 5 years, and it has affected the way, like, my opinion on the industry.
Mm-hmm.
And you do somewhat feel out of place when you don't see other people that look like you in the industry.
You get used to it after a while, too. I feel like, especially in publicity, because you're meeting so many people, and eventually, like, many years in, like, as you're saying, you get used to people not looking like you, and you're never surprised anymore when you meet people who just... white when they show up.
Yeah, it's like... right. You learn how to not deal with it, but you learn how to, like, you almost make relationships based on other things, obviously, and that makes it more comfortable.
Something that we've heard from acquiring editors is I'm not getting enough diverse submissions, and as an agent, do you find that you get a disproportionate amount of non-POC authors, or, you know, what's the case there?
I mean, I think one of the first things is you can't always necessarily tell, you know, if the author is a person of color.
Totally fair.
One of the agency assistants and I were talking about this today with Google, and if you have yourself hooked up to Google Plus, you now have, like, that little picture in the corner, and as we've been going through our queries, and that has become something that's, you know, a feature, it does have a slight effect on you when you can see what the person looks like. And I would say, like, it probably, it affects me more so with gender, actually. Like, you know, if I am reading it and it's, like, a female protagonist and then I see, like, it's a man, like, it does make me stop and think about, like, okay, the art, like, you know, the author, you have to, like, what are they bringing?
Right. Yeah, that's true. I never thought of that. That's interesting. I didn't know that many people had their picture for Google Plus.
Yeah.
Mine is my cat.
Well, Gmail at all, too, nowadays.
We use Gmail as our server, so even with my agency email, my picture pops up.
Yeah, my work email is as well as Gmail, so I'm starting to see my coworkers' pictures, which is kind of disconcerting. Mm-hmm. Even though I see them every day, it's just weird to see their picture up when you get an email.
It's like you can hear it coming out of their voice or out of their mouth, the email.
But I think also readers feel that way, too, sometimes if they look at something that J.K. Rowling, you know, or various other people who use initials, and then you're like, oh, that's a woman writing sci-fi, or, you know, that's a Caucasian man writing about slavery, or something like that. So it is, I think it also affects, I think it affects most people if you go in blind, and then you find out who the author is, and it diverts completely from what they're writing about, you may be like, huh, I'll be a little bit more critical now.
Right. And I think as far as, you know, how many diverse manuscripts I'm seeing in my slush pile, a lot of it is you can't tell unless, like, maybe they mention, you know, a black character or something, and then maybe you wonder, you know, so are they a black writer? And then you wonder, oh, wait, are they a white writer? And if so, are they writing authentically? Mm-hmm. And, but overall, I really do not see much, you know, submissions, much diverse submissions at all. It really does seem as though it's coming from a pool of white people, basically, the submissions that I receive.
Do you have the thing where, like, a lot of agencies have it now where you have, it's, like, one of the required components of your submission is to have, like, a really bare-bones, like, marketing platform? Like, oh, I have this many followers on Twitter or Tumblr, and, like, I know how to do X, Y, and Z.
Definitely for the books. So I do fiction and nonfiction, but definitely for the nonfiction titles, we like to see a really robust... Well, I like to see someone who, like, knows how to use social media, is on social media, knows how to interact, knows how to, like, use it as a tool. And am I answering your question?
Yeah, no, that is. And I think, like, that's something that will help as we get, like, with more younger writers, you know, becoming more seasoned and, you know, entering their late 20s and stuff like that, and who have been using that stuff for a while, and I think that that might help increase diverse and POC, like, making the next professional step to getting an agent, is because, you know, they have this savvy that is, like, attractive to survive now in, like, the agent and, like, editor climate.
Totally. And
that,
I'm...
That makes me hopeful about that.
Yes, totally. And I'm definitely an agent that, like, goes out and looks for people also. And I think the internet has opened a lot of doors for people who... So say you want to write, instead of saying, like, okay, I'm going to go get my MFA, and then I'm going to go get an agent and get my book published, you can say, like, I'm just going to start a blog. And I'm going to, you know, write every day, and I'm going to see where it takes me. And then you kind of, when you, you know, say you submit your work to an agent, instead of me just seeing, like, your submission there, I can go back and research you, and, like, whatever, like, you know, preconceptions I've had about who you are as an author, like, I can kind of actually read about who you are and see you as, like, a person and not as, like, okay, she's a woman who's white, who's, you know.
Yeah.
You're not just, like, checking off stereotypical characteristics in your head and then making assumptions about that. So I think that the internet has not only allowed writers more access to publishing, but also I think it's allowed us in publishing, like, definitely agents and... other people working in publishing to be like, hello, we would like to see these books. Here's a reminder. Thank you.
Yeah, on that note, do you have conversations with other agents about actively acquiring books by POCs? And is it something that's talked about openly by those around you?
So I would say, in my experience, prior to the We Need Diverse Books hashtag, it was never talked about.
Really?
Unless... You know, not, it's something that I thought about, but it's an uncomfortable thing to bring up. Like, race is uncomfortable to begin with. Mm-hmm. And it's like, everyone wants to be politically correct. Everyone wants to be, you know, comfortable in the corporate environment. But, you know, not having these uncomfortable conversations leaves other people to feel uncomfortable on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. And everybody else is, you know, not feeling that way because they're not tackling these issues. Mm-hmm. But I think since the We Need Diverse Books hashtag has come around, like, really, that's what I think it has really made such a difference. In that it's almost like a... It's like a gateway drug, that's what I'm saying. Like, it allows you to, like, open the door to, like, this uncomfortable conversation with, in, like, a way that's like, hey, you know this hashtag? Yeah. Are you looking for diverse books? Instead of being like, do you...
I'm going to bring up race now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like... When you start to bring up race, it's like, I promise I'm not getting on a soapbox. But just saying, you know, we need diverse books... If you could visually tell if the other person knows what you're talking about and if it's something that they believe in also. Mm-hmm. And then you kind of just have an understanding, like, we are both working together mm-hmm. to, you know, make this movement mm-hmm. a thing.
Yeah.
And agents are often, you know, the first people to hear someone's book ideas, whether it's in a formal proposal form or, like, discussions and casual advice asking. And so... What do you think the best relationships between the writing community and agents looks like or would look like?
So I think a really important thing about the agenting, you know, as an agent, what kind of relationship you have with the writing world and writing community is about reciprocity. Mm-hmm. So sometimes I'll get a manuscript, I'll read it, I'll realize it's not ready, it's not for me, but it's, like, you know, I took the time to read the whole manuscript, there are clear things that are jumping out at me, I might as well write an email that's going to take me, like, it might take me a few other minutes, extra minutes, but I have ideas, let me tell mm-hmm. this person, mm-hmm. and, you know, I invite them, like, you know, if you ever revise, please send it back to me, but that's something that's, like, good karma, it's, like, output, and, like, you're helping that writer, mm-hmm. whether or not they come back to you, they might go to somebody else, and that's, mm-hmm. like, supporting the whole ecosystem. Mm-hmm. And I think that is important.
Yeah. Yeah, we talked about in the last episode with Cynthia mm-hmm. about giving you feedback and submissions and the capacity to do that and mm-hmm. sort of similar. Mm-hmm.
But also the artist understanding that someone took that time and not going out of bounds too.
Right.
So the reciprocity where you're giving someone that respect. Someone mm-hmm. has to give you the respect to say thank you and much appreciated, and I will come back to you in 6 months or thank you. Just say thank you.
Right. And I mean, I think so much of publishing feels personal, but sometimes it really, like, just don't take it personally. Like, you know, it's just maybe isn't for me, and you wouldn't want mm-hmm. someone to represent, you know, something that wasn't they weren't crazy about or they didn't feel the same passion about and stuff.
And there's a time to stop replying, I feel like, and then you should be comfortable with that and exiting the conversation gracefully on both ends. Like, just be like,
Do you think maybe that's a reason why more diverse people don't submit is maybe the personalization of it, where maybe if you haven't been in an environment that's been embracing of your work because it's not diverse. And then you go out and it's like, okay, here's my heart on, you know, 150-page manuscript. Because it is a personal thing for an artist. But do you think because maybe they haven't necessarily been experiencing support in a writing community or didn't have a writing community, that it feels 10 times as personal mm-hmm. if someone finally does go to the agent and then perhaps they shut the door?
Right.
Yeah, it's like, oh, I got 10 no's. That was, because I've heard, and it's kind of ridiculous to me. And someone said, I got 10 no's. I was like, that's it? You need to get into triple digits, man. Like, before you give up, I was like, you need to build that armor.
Yeah, that's, Aiden's going to triple, you know, several digits when it comes to sending stuff out.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that this feels somewhat universal in that when you're a person of color, that you're always kind of wondering if people are, you know, taking your race into account and mm-hmm. holding that against you. And, like, you don't want to walk around paranoid all day, but, you know, say you go to look at an apartment mm-hmm. and, you know, because of how you look, they say, like, oh, no, it's not available anymore. Mm-hmm. You want to have a certain level of, like, protection of yourself, mm-hmm. but I can see how that would get in the way of someone feeling open enough to, you know, be vulnerable and share their work, mm-hmm. and then realizing, like, oh, this is getting shot down just because I'm Black. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That must be a really scary thing. Mm-hmm. I will say that I have my photo up on the agency website, and, like, my race is somewhat ambiguous. I'm mixed, so my dad is Black, my mom's, you know, white Italian. But I have, like, crazy hair, so usually people think, like, okay, she's something.
She has very nice hair.
And I do think that sometimes I have gotten submissions from people of color only because I am a person of color, and sometimes I think that's a disadvantage because it's almost like, are you sure that we match up taste-wise and everything like that? And I think that just means that there aren't enough agents, you know, of color that they can submit to. Mm-hmm. I know that you guys have already gone over this, but recently I saw that the industry survey from last year, it's like 1% of publishing is African-American. 1%! Like, the rare time I'm the 1%.
Makes no sense, because I feel like they're, of all the minorities, African-American is more represented in publishing. I could be wrong, but that's what I feel like.
I think the survey, it was like 1% African-American and then 3% Asian. Yeah. And so I was just in the NYU Masters of Publishing program. Mm-hmm. So I was in it for like 3 years and I just graduated. And I would say that percentage breakdown probably is the same percentage breakdown of my classes that I had. Mm-hmm. So there'd be like, you know, a couple of Asians, you know, me, another Black person, and then everyone is white. And you know, the idea of NYU, too, it's like, oh, my goodness. Like, there is, I think, a big economic disparity, too.
Oh, yeah.
So, actually, I was talking to a friend of mine who grew up lower class, you know, socioeconomically. And her and I spoke about how at NYU it could feel somewhat isolating when you realize everyone else around you kind of grew up rich. Mm-hmm. Not everyone else around you, but a lot of people around you grew up rich, and, like, what that kind of means and how much more, like, cultural exposure they've had, and how isolating that can feel. But I think overall the NYU program was really helpful. Mm-hmm. The master's program in publishing.
Yeah, we had Tawana on, and she did the NYU. Was it the NYU that she had done?
I think it was Pace. Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
Forget it.
I think. And then,
no, yeah. It was Ebony. Ebony was doing the NYU, and actually recently left it. Mm. Yeah, so, yeah. Yeah, it's just interesting how that disparity is continuous. Mm-hmm. It's not as though, oh, well, here's a part of the industry that's very diverse. It's like, no.
No.
Like, it's not diverse with the artists. It's not diverse with the lit agents or the publishing programs. Or
the editors. I mean, there are diverse editors, and it's almost, you know, similarly to how agents get used to rejection the way authors do, agents get used to having to, like, look at an editor and kind of say, like, they look like they might like this book. You know, it's a similar process. And when I have a book that's specifically about, you know, race or something, it feels like, ugh, I wish I had someone who understood this. You know what I mean? And it's not saying that someone who's not of color wouldn't understand it. But it's almost like you feel like you don't have allies within the, you know, because you find something, and of course, like, we need diverse books. It's diverse books require, like, a little extra push right now. Hopefully in the future they won't. But, you know, you submit it to me, you did all your hard work, and I'm doing all my hard work, and then I'm sending it on to someone who I'm hoping is also doing all their hard work and, like, putting, like, the extra work behind it. But if there isn't diversity in, like, publishing houses, like, it stops at agents. So, like, if there isn't someone I can compel to buy, you know, something that I'm saying is new, hasn't been proven, you know, I know this doesn't match up with any book that you have that's ever been selling, which is something that I've come across in some of the books that I've, you know, I found comp books, like, you know, comparable books, but not competitive books. So, which is a good thing, but it's also like, I can't find a competitive book because really there is no other book mm-hmm. out here, out there that exists like this one. Mm-hmm. So that's.
Yeah. Well, Anjali was saying something along those lines as well, as well as feeling defined by her choices and being a literate person, but also being a person of color mm-hmm. and those assumptions that go hand in hand with that, especially for her as an editor, because she felt like this defines me in my industry and in as my role, because I'm trying to acquire and da-da-da-da, but I'm defined as the Indian American author. I mean, editor.
Right, right.
Yeah, so whereas you're getting stuff potentially because you are diverse as well, and someone's like, oh, well, you know, she might totally get this, da-da-da-da. You're being defined by that, just as an editor might be like, oh, well, we have this, you know, book, and it's, you know, people of color in it.
Yeah, that's
you're
your
Latino,
department.
You're Latino.
Yeah.
You
can get it.
like the NBC correspondents, and you're just like, why is the black guy interviewing the black guy?
Because they must know each other, obviously. They must be pals. Yeah, I mean, I think, so when I was growing up and the Spice Girls were huge. I loved the Spice Girls. I loved all of them. But when I hung out with my friends, you're Scary Spice.
Wow.
I'm always Scary Spice. Whether or not I want to be Scary Spice, I have no control over that because, hey, you're black and you have hair. Like, you're Scary Spice. And I feel like it's a good analogy somewhat because, you know, if I was an editor at a house, like, or even in, like, at an agency when people are submitting to you, it feels like that's their thought process sometimes.
Yeah.
Or, like, that's the thought process, like, in the house. Yeah, just give it to the Indian American editor if it's diverse, and they'll take care of it. Which almost takes away from the diversity, because, like, what would be great is if people who were maybe not considered diverse within publishing made it their business to acquire diversely.
Absolutely.
I think at BinderCon there was a panel.
Oh,
and there was an agent.
The last one?
Yeah.
Aisha Pandey
mm-hmm.
and Malaika, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really good to see an agent who wasn't necessarily of color who literally made, like, you know, almost acknowledging, like, this is a tougher path to be like, I am going to purposely go after books that are
mm-hmm.
different.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it is. You know, you have to kind of convince people, like I said, of things that haven't been proven as successful yet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Or really latch on to what has been successful.
Mm-hmm.
That minority within the minority, like the Jackie Woodsons mm-hmm. and the Kwame Alexanders now, who won the Newbery, and the Chimamandas and the Zadies
mm-hmm.
and all that. And Juno, everyone gets on the Juno bandwagon.
Oh, yeah, of course.
it's like Drown meets.
Do you think from this back to the submission side, do you think that some of it is like, people of color don't feel like they're necessarily savvy enough to even submit to an agent? Like, that's something that's come up when people talk about who applies to jobs, and, like, especially more on the gender disparity side,
mm-hmm.
they say men will apply for jobs that they're wildly unqualified for,
mm-hmm.
whereas women will just hang back and not do it. And, like, I feel like I've talked to writers of color who feel like, oh, I'm not even, like, slick enough, you know, everything isn't together enough for me to even submit to an
mm-hmm.
agent. And not that that makes up for the whole problem, but,
right.
you know,
mm-hmm.
it's something that could be happening.
Mm-hmm. So, I think a thing that must be tough for writers of color is maybe they feel pressure to only write about, like, race issues and race topics, and that if they're not writing about those things, then they really have no hook.
Mm-hmm.
Or that, like,
mm-hmm.
they're almost removing any, like, hook that they may have,
mm-hmm.
Or, like, angle.
Right.
And I think that might keep people from submitting. And I also think there's that problem where, like, sometimes I would love to just, like, read a YA book, and it doesn't matter who the author, like, who the, like, it, just because you're a writer of color, it doesn't necessarily need to, like, mean there's, like, characters of color
mm-hmm.
or something like that. I mean, it's great if there are. But it means that you have, like, a more informed view, and you're going to,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's going to be built into the book.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll have authentic people of color, you know,
mm-hmm.
in the book, or you'll have, so I think that the publishing industry's expectations of the type of content that people of color are supposed to be submitting is kind of limiting and
mm-hmm.
just disencouraging and or discouraging. Yeah. And I mean, I've actually gotten a submission before, and it was just like a terrible like art thingy that someone did. It really just seemed like, you know, it was a mass send out, mm-hmm. like blah blah blah, and that's kind of probably more so than why I rejected it. And the woman replied to me saying that I was racist. And I was like, I'm sure that works with some people to make them feel a little weird. But however, it made me stop and think, like, how many times, like, did you really, like, that might probably is how she feels. Mm. And, like, you know, I wonder what type of rejections she's received and, like, you know, mm-hmm. how can you not internalize that after a while?
Yeah, there's a lot of sense. I've seen agents tweet that someone wrote to one of them and said, well, you're my 50th rejection, so that proves I shouldn't be a writer anymore. I'm going to quit. And she said, I need to go out drinking now because I hate these. It's very shocking to me what people say to agents. It's just very it's very surprising.
Yeah, also, like, it's like, you know, just
racist,
because I reject.
I knew you hate me. It's just like,
well, sometimes I want to, like, rant at you at, like, the publishing industrial complex. It's like, it's not just me. Yeah. I have not that much control. And, I mean, especially, I work at a smaller agency, so it's not like I work at, like, Trident or anything. Yeah. Like, we don't even necessarily have that much, you know, say. Yeah.
That's true.
Am I not giving long enough answers to these questions? No. I have, like, all these notes, but I'm just, like, rambling.
No, it's fine. That's good.
Wait, I have a funny comment. Okay, so do you watch Key and Peele? Are you familiar? So there's a skit, and it's, like, the Obama meet and greet. So it's when Peele is, like, dressed as Obama, and, like, mm-hmm. he's, like, talking, you know, at the podium, and then he, like, does a little, like, he gets off the podium, and he's doing this little, like, walk with the press and stuff. Mm-hmm. And he's, like, walking past, like, the white people and, like, shaking their hands. And, like, whenever, like,
yeah,
a person, like,
one.
Of color sees, he'd, like, fist bump them and he, like, will hug them and, like,
and
head
he knows
nod.
Their names.
Right. It's like, it's all we got. And it's just, like, sometimes it is like that. Like, when you walk into a room and it's, like, only white people and then you see one other person, you're like, hey, how you doing? And you, like, make eye contact. I feel like that's something I thought about before I came. In response to all the questions, I actually, like, watched the skit earlier today. So, like, it's so like that
too.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, and it's just, like, just a connection that happens immediately.
Yeah. It is true.
Because you feel so much like, when you're a minority that does make it in publishing, you feel like an insider,
mm-hmm.
like an outsider looking in, because, you know, it's not like you could, like, turn to all your, like, friends who are minorities who aren't in publishing and be like,
mm-hmm.
isn't publishing great?
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, and then when you're, like, within publishing, so it's like you're an insider looking out, outsider looking
mm-hmm,
in
mm-hmm.
type thing, it feels sometimes like you have to, like, there's no one else that kind of has the same situation going on.
Yeah.
That can be weird, too, because, you know, I'm mixed, so
mm-hmm.
I identify, like, very differently than just, like, someone who's white or someone who's black.
Mm-hmm.
I think above race, but I, like, sometimes kind of try to remove race from things because it gets so complicated in my brain.
Yeah. I mean, I'm at a small university press, which is very diverse because when I do the numbers, it's almost 50%.
Mm.
In that number, I include people in the LGBTQ community as well. So, like, to me, it's like, wow, this is really, really diverse. Whereas when I worked at 500, you know, Fortune 500, it was very small fish, big pond. And you find your allies in certain ways, but it is kind of like I was really good friends with the guys in the mailroom who were always black.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, always talking to them, hanging out with them, and just like there was a rapport, and it probably was just because of the color thing.
Right.
Even if I'm an editor or an executive assistant, there's just a level that you get
mm-hmm.
with them. And it doesn't matter your job titles, you're just hanging out and talking and saying, you know, whatever things and not worrying about being politically correct.
Right. It's like an unspoken understanding.
Yeah,
I'm always worried that I'm going to come across as, like, politically incorrect and, like, offensive only
mm-hmm.
because I'm very radical and, like, not radical, but, like, mm-hmm. I want people to talk about these things. Like,
we
got to talk about it. We got to say these things. Like, and it's interesting because I keep thinking about, like, affirmative action, but that's not what this is.
No,
not. And, you know, like, I think for a while, I mean, we have to acknowledge that people were, like, actively only purposely, like, hiring white people and, you know, publishing white content and stuff like that. And it almost requires, like, an active effort to reverse that.
It's yeah, not just, that's you know, always what I've thought and said, because I mean, I feel like my personal opinion is, you know, white people have had their say in the publishing industry for 200 years now, and I think everyone making an active effort otherwise is no less than called for at this stage.
Exactly.
Like, it's just, like, yeah.
It can't be a passive change. It's not going to just be like, well, the world is more diverse, so, you know, it'll just naturally follow. Like, that's the same thing as, like, trickle-down economics. Like, yeah, sure, it'll trickle down.
You'll get to you eventually.
Yeah, just stay in the mailroom a little longer.
Be patient.
Yeah, yeah. That's what they've been saying. I think, too, and this, I keep returning to We Need Diverse Books because it's so important, but one of the panels at BinderCon, Stacey Whitman.
Oh, yeah, Stacey.
She spoke about how diversity is not just, like, race and, like, you know, gender or, like, you know, LGBTQ or disability, but also socioeconomic status and how she specifically said, like, she would, in one of the books she read, she said she grew up, you know.
Yeah, farmer.
Right.
Farm.
And, that, like, in a book, when somebody went to McDonald's, it, like, was such a big deal for her. And it's a totally different reality, I think, that people, you know, someone who grew up going to McDonald's every day, obviously they're not going to, like, write about one McDonald's experience as, like, oh, my God, like, this was, you know, so great. But for, like, you know, a kid that grew up poor, they can understand that. And if they're, like, if there aren't a lot of writers who came from that experience, there's a lack of experience being represented.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, that's the issue.
I find in YA particularly, there's this kind of, everyone's just doing well.
Right? It's like, this is the middle class, even though, you know, the American class.
Everyone's doing
good. No worries. Yeah.
It's not like they're super rich. Like, they're super rich, you kind of get that.
That's
too.
Like a genre, yeah.
But everyone's kind of on the middle of the road, you know? It's like, we got cable, we got computers, we got Wi-Fi, I live in a house.
Yeah. No one's struggling, coming home whining about any bills. Yeah.
Eating every day. So it's like,
alright. When the fact is, there are a lot of YA readers and adult readers and kids who, you know, are stressed out every day about where their food might come from, and maybe if they had, like, you know, obviously, like, young kids, I think, read to escape, too. Or well, first they read to learn, right? And then at a certain stage, you, like, read to escape. But just, like, imagine if those kids, like, it's so important for those kids to know they're not alone.
Yeah.
And, you know, really, right now, I feel like they're told they are.
Yeah. And I do believe, I was saying on the publishing certificate one that I think if we're going to get more diversity into the industry, that we need to start at a younger age, too. Because people, and Ebony and Tawana also mentioned that they didn't even think about getting into the industry until college, or as a career change, you know.
Right.
I was doing this, and then, oh, publishing sounds interesting, so I'll try that.
Yeah.
So do you think that that's something, like, when you came into the business, was that something you knew you wanted to do from undergrad, or was it something like, oh, publishing's something I'd like to do from a young age, or how did you come to decide, like, okay, literary agent, that's what I want to do?
So I definitely didn't know publishing existed as a thing until, like, several years into undergrad. So, like, when I was, like, a junior, and I was an English major and a journalism minor, like, I don't know, and I'd read, you know, I'd been a book person my whole life, and I don't know why no one had ever really explained to me, like,
that's
there
what
are
everyone
people.
Says.
It's like, we think books are magic that come from some, and they are, but, like, why are we not taught the, you know, and actually, my BFF is, like, a kindergarten or first grade teacher, and I've done this one once before, but on March 2nd, it's Dr. Seuss Day, and she has me come in and, like, talk to her students and read to them, but she, like, the first thing she does is explain, like, what I do and how, like, where books come from, and, like, the one year I did it, the kids were, like, flabbergasted. They were like, wait, what? And it's so true. It's, you know, if I had known about it when I was six, I probably would have wanted to do it, you know, my whole life. But I knew I wanted to be involved with, like, writing or, you know, that type of thing. What was the initial question?
Well, you pretty much answered it, that you didn't find out about publishing until you were an undergrad.
Right.
To be, like, this consistent thing, is that it's not until we're about to step out into the real world and said, oh, no, well, how am I going to eat?
Yeah.
Like, publishing is an option for you, English major.
Yeah. Well, and publishing really, really, really is, you have to know someone, I feel like. You almost have to know someone. At least, like, one person that can refer you or one person that can let you know about an opening. That's how I got into publishing, even though it was to a free internship, or, you know, unpaid internship.
Yeah.
But I think that's, so there are writers of color, there are, like, you know, people that are writing diverse stuff, there's agents, and then there's, like, you know, the rest of the ecosystem, and I think that's part of the problem. Like, we're taught about books and reading and writing so early, but why aren't we taught about, like, that, you know, publishing is a thing, and that there are, you know, different levels, and I'm always worried that a book that I have that maybe is a little, like, would rub, like, the mainstream pale male, like, the wrong way, that it's gonna get to me, it's gonna get to, like, the cool editor that I know, it's gonna get to editorial, and then it's just gonna be, like, ugh, no. Like, they're immediately gonna be, like, we are, like, no, that's, our shareholders wouldn't like that. Like, I'm, like, and the thing is, like, I don't work in a publishing, like, I don't work in a house, so I have no idea how that is. That's how it is. But it is scary sometimes when something gets rejected, and you know that it was a little, like, pushing the bar, and you wonder, like, was that why, you know, this got rejected?
Yeah. And if you can be a fly on that wall, too. Because, like, I've spoken to editor friends, too, and, you know, it's heartbreaking because they have to fight with the director or marketing team and say, so this is why I believe my book is going to sell a million. And you don't know it's going to sell a million copies, but you have to sell it somehow.
Right.
And then it dies for whatever reason. It may die because maybe you're a young editor, because maybe your last book didn't do well, because it's out the box. I mean, there's so many factors, but it does suck when you wonder if the diverse angle is a factor, and also if it was because it didn't fit into this hole of, oh, well, it's diverse, but the diversity isn't ramped up and it isn't an issue book. We want issue books.
And yeah. Well, and also, it's like a double-edged sword. So it's always great when you have a reason to have your book stand out from the rest, but if the reason is, you know, because it's diverse and all the other books aren't, then that's a detriment. Like, you know, that's not a good thing. But I just think that there aren't enough, like, normal, regular commercial stories being written by people of color without the acknowledgement that they're people of color. Like, you know, it should just be, like, interwoven that, you know, there's a diverse experience as a part of this, like, piece, and not just a one-sided experience.
Yeah. I was talking to someone, I forget whom, but I found that it seemed that many of the popular or often referred to Latin American artists, being an immigrant is often raised in their work. Like, coming from here and then coming to America. And that's also, like, a consistent thing. But that's not necessarily representative of Latin American culture.
Right.
Especially in America, you know, a lot of people were born here, and it's not about, oh, this is what this was like, and this is what it's like here, but there seems to be a consistency that you see in who gets to those charts, or who's marketed more in the POC realm, in literature. What I've noticed, I'm not saying it's the end-all be-all, but you see a trend, you know, the Jhumpa Lahiri, and whatnot, too, what she writes about. So a lot of times she does write about being an Indian American, and that seemed like, holy, you know, she's writing about being Indian American. People don't do that.
Yeah.
They, like, talk about being Indian and then coming to America.
It's like, it's not that people don't do that. People are doing that. They just don't have the exposure.
Yeah. But we can only have the one.
Yeah. And representation of the whole. It's almost like the industry is only comfortable with one. Because, I mean, this is different now that, like, Amazon's around. But we have an African American author who writes, like, commercial women's fiction. And, like, back when Borders was around, apparently they had, like, a really robust, like, they actually shelved, like, you know, here's the African-American section.
Mm-hmm.
Which I have, like, a whole other, like, thoughts about. Like, oh, God, like, do you not? Like, if, I can't imagine any white person going over to the African-American section and feeling comfortable or feeling, like, that they don't belong. It almost, like, it's very isolating. You know what I mean? It's, like, and then also it's, like, doesn't give the writer an opportunity to have audiences that that are diverse, so it's crazy. But so now that Borders isn't around, literally, like, it's just so hard to find space for her books. Space as in, like, how can we target this to the people who are looking for it, and where are they looking for it, and, like, can you only market it as, like, African-American without it taking away from the other? Like, should it be marketed as African-American and then women's fiction, or should it be women's fiction and then, you know, mentioned that there's, like, you know, an African-American, and then, like, you know, her cover choices are, you know, deciding, or, like, you know, we look at her covers, we're like, is this going to be, does this look somewhat race neutral? You know what I mean? Sometimes, like, I think there was one in, like, you know, someone holding something and you could only see their hand, and it wasn't, the person's skin wasn't too dark, it wasn't too light, but it was, like, ambiguous. And it's, I also think it's interesting what, like, book covers, how they skew, you know, your perception of, like, is this a diverse book? Is this a book for me? Like, meant for me? I think that's another thing, too, that I think publishers are doing a good job of trying to identify audiences and cater to those audiences, but they have to be aware, like, just because, you know, two readers have similar characteristics doesn't mean they're going to be wanting the exact same books. And everyone's just, like, a diverse array of stuff, and we want a diverse array of things to read.
Yeah. We're getting there, maybe.
Don't worry, I'll get us there.
Monica, get us there. We're building it slowly. I mean, it's also a question of, do you say it outright with the cover? Because I was editing someone's synopsis, and she was saying, biracial teen this, black bully this, Iraqi kid, and I was like, why are their races kind of, like, up front and center? What do their races have to do? And she was saying, well, people said I should say that because I should show that it's diverse. But it didn't correlate to the story. It was just kind of announcing race.
It can feel gimmicky.
Yeah, and that was my consideration. I don't know from the literary agent standpoint, but for me as a reader and a writer, I would feel like someone's just kind of, my book's diverse, you know, waving a flag. My book's diverse, see? I wrote a diverse book. You should totally, you know, be into it. And in a way, the diversity movement, I'm using quotes here, is great, but are people also trying to utilize that to get published in a way for material that doesn't seem genuine? Because they're like, hey, I got the diverse character, so you should totally be into that.
Right. So I totally wonder if, like, the We Need Diverse Book thing happened and then, you know, a couple of people took their manuscript, changed all the characters from white characters to black characters, but changed nothing else, and then resubmitted it. Like, I wonder if that actually happened, and I feel like sometimes it does.
I would not be surprised.
Yeah. I feel like sometimes that's what some of the things that come into my inbox. It just looks like, you know, you threw, like, black character in there, and that really, like, but it's not a genuine experience or, like, an authentic, not, like, representation, but just, you know, if you have a character who's of color, I feel like the thought process of some things, like, you know, say it's, like, a YA book, and it's a student, and they're sitting in class, and then, like, the Civil War gets brought up. Like, I always was uncomfortable when, like, the Civil War got brought up in class, when I was, like, sitting in a room full of white people. It's like, oh, God.
Everyone look at Monica.
Or, like, your ears would burn, because you'd be like, I know they're looking at me. Or, like, but the thing is, I would wonder if they were looking at me to gauge my reaction so that they were gauging their
Having
own reaction.
Having your own appropriate reaction. Yeah.
It's just so crazy. But what were we talking about?
Danielle and Sona talked about the nuances of writing characters a lot in their episode about that, especially for younger people.
Yeah, and the necessity of it, but the honesty. You know, there's a certain level of integrity, and for me, when I see someone kind of just throw out just those names it becomes the identifier, and you're identifying that character mm-hmm. only as being biracial or the black bully
right.
or the Iraqi nerd, or, you know, and that's, to me, is problematic in terms of diversity, is that you have to be honest in the representation of characters. And I don't know if you've seen that improve, not improve, or not from the agent standpoint, or...
It's a tough question. Yeah.
It is.
Sorry.
And I think... so, on the fiction side, I actually look for more, like, literary stuff, but mm-hmm. I do get the sense that, like, YA is where a lot of diversity is happening.
Mm-hmm.
Especially with the... Actually, my mother is hard of hearing, and so I was really excited when El Defo won.
Oh, my
gosh. And I told her about it, and that's, you know, for young readers, and it's like, my mom's, like, in her... She's turning 60, actually, and so she's been hard of hearing for, like, 50 years, and she's probably needed this book for 50
mm-hmm.
years.
Mm-hmm.
Like, has needed a character that she could, like, even if it's a... You know, even if she's reading through the eye, like, reading a 15-year-old or whatever, and it just reminded me, you know, how many other people are out there that kind of need to read experiences like their own
mm-hmm.
to not feel so,
yeah.
you know, isolated.
Yeah, and not feel pigeonholed because, you know, that's that character. So, obviously, they're sassy or exotic.
Right.
Which is a word minorities hate.
Right. It's like my Spice Girls analogy. So, like, just because I'm black, I'm scary Spice. But really, if you thought about who I was and my personality, I should probably be, like, posh Spice. Or, like, no, not posh. Let me think about them. But, you know, yeah, instead of, like, looking at someone saying, like, what is their personality? And, like, you know,
mm-hmm.
it's just, like, race. Then, because of their race, here are their personality traits. And it's like, is that grounded in any kind of reality?
Yeah.
I don't
true.
Know.
I liked what Donna said a lot about, maybe it was Danielle or Sona said a lot about doing research and, like, writing
mm-hmm.
characters of different races and,
mm-hmm.
you know, being POCs themselves, but writing about, you know, the experiences of another POC who
mm-hmm.
they aren't necessarily
mm-hmm.
in the same, you know, race or ethnicity as, and
right.
doing that respectfully, and how that can be applied across the board to writers.
Absolutely.
I think that's another thing, too, like, just because, so, I consider myself, I guess, like, a person of color, but I'm also aware that there are other diverse experiences that I don't know about.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I would say I think I tweeted this, but, like, I think there should be big brothers and big sisters of, like, other races. Like, if, like, I want, like, an Asian big sister who can, like, I just need more, like, I know personally that I need more exposure
mm-hmm.
to, like, Asian and Asian American culture. And,
mm-hmm.
like, I have a couple Asian friends who I love, and, like, but I just wasn't exposed to enough.
Mm-hmm.
And I yearn to know them, but I also, like, I don't know, because I don't have many people that I know, I can't be like, hi, can I be friends with your Asian friends? You know what I mean? It's so weird. But, like, but you have, like, a shared experience of being, like, non-white. So,
right.
you know, there are ways
yeah.
that, like, you can relate and have, like, universal themes that,
mm-hmm.
And I think it allows, you know, as a diverse person, you're already a little more receptive to
mm-hmm.
diversity. And then, like, so if you were going to try to, like, write about someone from a different culture that even you didn't know about, you'd at least be sensitive to some of the
yeah.
things that you need to be sensitive to.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because, like, some of my closest friends are, we grew up together and they're Latino, and their experience is very different. Like, you and I and Preeti were talking about the black and whiteness that I feel it's very, race is considered very black and white in America,
mm-hmm.
and that I don't experience the things that you and Preeti would experience, which is that even though you were born here, people think you're not American, which I don't get at all,
right.
you know? And so it's very, you know, so it's like we have similar experiences, but there are aspects of being a POC in different areas
mm-hmm.
that
oh, yeah,
you
totally.
Don't,
yeah.
there's definitely no overlap.
And I think, yeah, there should be some sensitivity to that, of course.
Yeah,
always.
But I think sometimes that is forgotten, especially, you know.
It is definitely
in the POC.
Forgotten.
It's just like, no, we're all minorities. It's like,
no.
Hold up.
Yeah, no,
yeah.
I actually,
like,
I actually really, really
group,
hate that,
yeah.
as you know. Like,
yeah.
that's kind of one of my banes.
The book Americana, actually,
mm-hmm.
That was the first
oh,
time
yeah,
I ever really thought about what it means to be, like,
African.
Yeah,
yeah,
like, that, the character was like, I never thought about being, how black I was until I came to America and everyone kept pointing out how black I was.
Yeah.
As opposed to like...
Yeah, even like the Latin American experience in... Or like the Hispanic or Latino, whoever you identify, experience in America is so different. Like, depending on, you know, there's if were you born here? Are you first generation? Are you not? Like, mm-hmm. there's a lot of different layers. And like, people are, you know, I think America tends to think of it as just being everyone's Latino. Or like, but really, people identify by their country, where they're from, more so than like.
Yeah, it's kind of like a hodgepodge, right?
Yeah.
Like people don't realize there's Dominican and Peruvian.
And there's like a ton of, you know, there's Central America and then there's everything. Yeah,
and there's Spain, which is not the same. I didn't realize, I think, because I went to diverse, I mean, I grew up in New York City, that then I started meeting, you know, Puerto Ricans, and they're Mexicans, and they're Dominicans, and they're Colombians. And I was like, oh, okay. Because everyone was just like, oh, you know, Hispanics, Latinos. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. And then someone's like, I'm not Mexican, I'm Puerto Rican. I'm not this, I'm this. And
yeah.
Oh, okay. So, but not everyone has that grasp. You know, like, I went to school with a diverse set of people. And if I didn't go to school, it would be helpful to read about them, to see them on TV.
Right.
To be able to get in that mindset where it's like, I wouldn't go up to someone and just offend them and say, hey, you're Mexican, right? And be like, no.
I think that also sometimes is what keeps, like, if you're an editor and you want to acquire like a diverse quote project, I imagine it could be tough in that you're not, you don't trust yourself maybe that like you'll be able to do right by it, and I think that is what keeps some, you know, white editors from embracing and taking on projects done, you know, by people of color or LGBTQ, and but like they're not going to get more comfortable until like they do one,
embrace,
and
it.
Then you know,
right?
So.
And learn from it, to be open to learning, not assuming that you're going to know everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think a lot of like right now is like embracing that like the discomfort with this, and I think being diverse books is making it a lot easier. But I think right now that's it, too. Like, people aren't sure what they're allowed to say and what they're allowed... Like, Twitter's helping, too. You know, Twitter's, like, a good...
Yeah, sounding board.
Yeah, and you can, like, say stuff, and either it goes off into the void, or, like, a bunch of people reply, and you're like, oh, okay, other people think this, too.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the conversation's not dying out, and I'm happy about that, because I see something with diversity is mentioned at conferences constantly now.
Mm-hmm.
I just read about, I don't know what it stands for next, technically, WI10?
Winter Institute, that's a thing that's happening now. Yeah, it's like a thing with the independent booksellers and publishers. Yeah, because we have our rights and publicity staff, or some of them there now. So
I just saw like John Grant. I was like, all right, John Grant is there. People are going crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And something the ABA brought up was, we need more diversity. How do we sell diverse books? And that was in Publishers Weekly today, February 11th. And another thing was, we need a scholarship program. They have a scholarship. ABA has a scholarship program, but they really want to focus it to getting diverse applicants as booksellers. It was just like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. Mm-hmm. And then at, you know, ALA, Midwinter, discussed the diversity. You know, BEA, BookCon's coming up, diversity. You know, the whole thing with the children's panel that happened last week and how it blew up so quickly. And it's just like, wow, people are pissed and people are vocal. And every week, BuzzFeed, Bustle, FlavorWow, Mother's Nature's Network, there's something on diversity every week.
I really love like the white people who are just like, I call them my clear people. Like, who, like the white people who get it. You know what I mean? Like, you, like, I... There are people sometimes, it'll be like someone who I follow who's white who says something, and I'm like, you said that better than I even said it, and you were just as pissed off about it, and just as, like, you said it with conviction, and you said it, like, I feel like diversity, like, the word diversity and the word diverse is already becoming, like, a thing that means nothing, almost, and that, like, someone can just start at a publishing house and be like, I want a diverse book without really knowing what the word diverse means anymore. Like, it's only been, like, a year, but, like, that word is becoming, like, a meaningless term, and we almost, like, what does it mean to, like, want diverse
books?
Shy
away from it a lot for that reason. I feel like it's too umbrella, even though,
exactly.
Like, now,
people
like,
have said that.
Yeah.
They don't like the term diverse, but it's also kind of a safer term, because you don't want to eliminate or exclude anyone.
Right.
So it's a safe umbrella term because you don't want to, you know, say, well, I mean, POCs only, you know.
Well, I feel like there should be room for both. There should be for people who like the umbrella term and people who don't
I can't even think about, I can't even think of another term, though. Like, diversity is the perfect term, but.
Mm-hmm. It's getting overused.
Yeah, yeah.
A little overused.
Yeah.
But it's a good thing, and hopefully people are really recognizing what diversity does mean, not just that it's, oh, I want a diverse book, and that means it has at least one person who's in 20 pages of this book who is fits a category that is not traditional. So, I don't know. But, yeah, we'll see. But thank you so much, Monica, for being on and for your insight.
Yeah, why don't you tell us where you people can follow you and anything else you'd like to share?
Oh, on Twitter, I can be followed at Modum Odum. It's a palindrome, M-O-D-O-M-O-D-O-M. And you could also check out my agent profile on the website, LizaDawsonAssociates.com. And you can also see my submission info there, and I look forward to reading stuff that people send me.
Yay, yeah, polish awesome. Stuff, people. Polish it off and send. And then send thank you notes.
Follow guidelines.
Yes, beautiful. Follow guidelines. Please follow the guidelines.
That is key. Please and thank you.
Well, thank you again, Monica. And we're going to have more guests coming up. The next one is Daniel Jose Older, which I'm very excited about. He has a new book out called Half Resurrection Blues, and he has another one coming out called Shadow Shaper. And he's done the Vona Voices workshop and all these amazing things. And you more than likely, if you've been following the diversity quote unquote movement, then you read his BuzzFeed essay. It was one of the most retweeted, reblogged things next to Walter Dean Meyer's amazing New York Times piece as well. So very excited to have Daniel on. So again, you can follow us on Twitter at Minorities in Pub, minoritiesinpublishing.tumblr.com, and yeah, I think that's it.
Yep.
Yay.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.